Hello everyone, I'm Matt Berry. This is the fourth episode of a series of conversations with Jean-Michel Jarre at his studio in Paris. Today, we'll be talking about electronica.
So, Jean-Michel, when did you get the idea to do the collaborations, the first album?
Actually, I've been through quite a dark period in my life when the same year I lost both of my parents, Francis Dreyfus, my publisher and record company guy, and also quite a painful divorce. And then I really needed something to change in my life. I thought about something that I would like to, what I wanted to do for quite a long time is actually to be involved in a project collaborating with people where most of the time, as you know, in electronic music, you're quite isolated in your own studio, like a writer, painter in his atelier.
Yeah.
And then I wanted to open the door. And then I went into this kind of initiation type of trip journey by saying, okay, why not trying to contact people who have been a source of inspiration in my life and trying to get a collaboration with them. So I said, okay, let's do that. And then I just had two principles or two in my dogma. One would be to meet with people face to face. And second would be to create a demo, first demo, based on the fantasy or the idea I have regarding the artist I want to work with, which is not necessarily who he is,
yeah,
my idea of him or her. And then I started to contact various kind of people of different generations with the idea also, I mean, to meet with people linked one way or the other to electronic music and to technology. So that was really the idea behind it. And then I started to contact people and I had no idea if they would say yes or no. And this guy even was quite pessimistic about saying, they're not, what's going to happen. And then I got the surprise that they all said yes.
Yeah.
And then I ended with what was supposed to be just one single album became two double albums. And with 32 different collaborators, and it took me 5 years to achieve the whole project. And the reason why that I divided this project, Electronica 1 and 2, but it was more like a Kill Bill 1, Kill Bill 2, part of the same story, but just divided in two because it was too long.
Yeah.
And so there is no particular concept between one or the other, but just the fact that I put in the first Electronica the tracks ready at that time.
Yeah.
And then I started to, I mean, travel in Germany, in the UK, in France, in the US, I mean, everywhere where I could meet the people I wanted to work with. And I must say it has been an extraordinary journey for me, an extraordinary learning process. Because I mean, all the people I wanted to work with, they have in common something very specific to artists. They have an instant recognizable sound. You listen to 30 seconds of Moby, or Massive Attack, or Pete Townsend, you know who they are.
Yeah.
And then also the fact of putting yourself, not in danger, but actually it was very generous on their side to open their door to their private, to the bedroom, in a sense.
Yeah.
Where you have your little secrets, your little weak points or strong points, and then sharing this with somebody you don't know that well. So it has been hugely generous on their side, and I tried really to respect also the fact that all of them said, you do whatever you want, man, it's your project, so we are involved, but you had the final cut, and so I really I've been really aware of trying to keep a 50-50% of our mutual DNA, and that actually for me worked very well, because I and some people could wonder why I, for instance, I worked with in an album called Electronica with somebody like Pete Townsend.
Mm.
But Pete Townsend for me is a very important part of act in electronic music.
Yeah.
And because it's the first one to have involved sequences in rock music, as you know, with album like Who's Next or Baba O'Reilly, some songs like this. And also something else very close to that make me quite close to Pete Townsend is actually he's also the one who invented something more than just a rock album with conceiving the first rock opera.
Yeah,
first and actually concept. Pushing the boundaries of just rock songs and but a concept.
Yeah.
Then I think that for me is also another link we have together. And I must say that I went, for instance, I talk about Pete, but I went for the first time in to Richmond where he's living, and I prepared three different demos. And we spent half a day in the kitchen and discussing about lots of things. And then I explained that to him. He was very interested. And then he listened to the three tracks and he said, wow, I mean, I think that if you want, we could do the three of them. And that was not my idea at the beginning. And you know what I could do? I could be your lyricist singing and doing some of the diggeding that, and then we could maybe conceive a kind of small electro rock opera. That we did. And actually we did three tracks. Yeah. And suddenly I had this kind of 20 minutes piece of music in the middle of electronica. I think it's going to be too much because it's kind of twisting my original idea. So we decided to just to release one track of the three and the other ones in the future. So this is an example. And for every artist, I mean, I discovered that the magic of the people. I mean, I remember with Moby, I mean, having me, I mean, this in his studio in Los Angeles, and we were starting working, and then you just played a D minor with three notes like a 5 years child could do, and it was Moby instantly. And this is what I call really the magic.
Yeah.
The magic sound of, it's like where I was talking about Chet Baker. You know, Chet Baker, you have thousands of people playing the trumpet. Chet Baker is playing like Miles Davis. They play 15 seconds of their instruments. You know it's them and nobody else.
Yeah.
And that's really, and for electronic music is even more difficult because synth has so many different colors. So.
But the same could be said for you. Yeah. I would, less than 15 seconds, I'd know it was you within a second and a half.
Thank you for saying it. But I think that if an artist has a sound, I mean, it is in this kind of situation. That's actually what Hans Zimmer told me. That's what you said. He said exactly the same thing. 15 seconds of what you're doing, and I know it's you and nobody else.
Yeah.
And you know, it's a frustrating thing talking about this, in a sense. It goes back, it sends us back to what Fellini told me about the fact that whatever you try to do, you can't escape from who you are, whether you like it or not.
Yeah. Yeah. For the artist, that's kind of frustrating. But for your audience, not so much, I guess, because it's kind of comforting to hear your sounds and to hear your sort of signature. Yeah. So did everybody meet you, or was there some that you conducted as a correspondence?
No, I mean, actually all of them, except for the Pet Shop Boys, because they were. So we just had these kind of things I wanted to avoid.
Yeah,
because they were on tour, very busy on doing things. We were about to meet a few times, and then we missed each other. And then I had to finish the track, so we had that, and we said, okay, we meet after. But just in the moment, that this is the only artist. Otherwise, I was with. I met everybody physically.
That's impressive, isn't it?
Yeah, there's a reason why it took me so much time.
Yeah, yeah. So artistically, which was the one that you were the most pleased with?
It's very difficult because it's not to be polite to anyone, but I can swear that every experience was so specific that I couldn't say this one is better than the other, because it was a matter of involvement and they were all involved. I could put a hierarchy in terms of the time we spent.
Yeah.
I mean, the record of the longest time to achieve something is definitely Robert Del Naja. Massive Attack. It took us probably 1 year and a half. We started with. I gave something. I think it's my mistake, because the first demo I gave him, I think by the end of the day was not exactly what we needed. So then, he he was trying in a very kind way, and nothing really happened. And then I said, okay, just forget it. And I sent it to him, something else.
Yeah.
And we worked together for maybe 2 days, and was it. It went very, very quickly. And probably the easiest way was also with Air, because they were in Paris. And even if it was a bit difficult, because they were through a difficult time of a divorce as a band.
And so I
did a bit of couple therapy, because actually I was very strange, because they went here in the studio, and it was really nice of them, because I felt part of the band for one moment.
Right.
Doing this song, really, the three of us in the same room. I mean, we finalized this in here in this room, and that was really, really nice.
Yeah. Because that's been something that I've always thought of. It'd be really interesting to see you sort of turn up in someone's band, just very, very briefly.
So I did that, actually, a year later with Damon Albarn, with Gorillaz.
You did, yeah.
Actually,
yeah.
I mean, then Damon, we went to each other in a party, and Damon said, oh, man, I'm so happy to have something I would like to propose, because I'm preparing the next, actually, Gorillaz album, and I really would like you to be involved. What do you think? And then I went to see him in his studio, and then we discussed and started to work. And then a few weeks later, he said, okay, I'm ready now. Do you know a studio where we could meet? I said, yes, I know one. And then they came with Jamie and the old Gorillaz gang here. And we spent 2 days here, where we actually did lots of jam sessions together. And then on seven songs, and then he kept three for the album. And then when they launched the album, he said, okay, you know, we are going to launch the album in this place in East London.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah. And then he said, would you care about coming? Because we are going to launch the album. It would be great if you could do, you would come for one track for the I Got the Power, one of the things we collaborated on. I said, yes. And then it never happened before. I took the Eurostar with one synth. We were together, one synth, and then with no rehearsals, I went on stage and I played directly in this kind of chaotic performance that the first Gorillaz performance with lots of people. And then we were on stage and I met Noel Gallagher for the first time on stage. And we were talking while we were actually playing, talking about saying, oh man, it's really great to see each other. And then we had quite a great conversation with Noel and lots of other people. And he said, you know, when I was a kid, I was listening to all your early albums every day and all that. And I said, and then I told him, this is the reason why you choose the guitar.
Yeah, the guitar. No, that's great. So which one was the most surprising out of them all? As in, you had an expectation of one thing and you ended up with something that was nothing like you imagined. Which artists would you say that happened with?
I would say two. One is somebody I know for a long time, which is with Laurie Anderson.
Yeah.
Because she's always surprising me. And once more, she went in the studio, and it was like a magic moment where we had this idea of doing a song, because that was something linked with and specifically the electronica too, linked about technology and the dark side of technology. And then we decided to do a song about the relationship between a connected object and a human being. It was just before her.
Right.
And then when we saw that her was existing a few weeks later, we called each other saying, it's strange, because we were talking about the same thing for the song. And then we did this song called Rely on Me, where of course she's playing the object.
Yeah.
And then Lou Reed passed away, and then she stopped everything. And of course I said, okay, I'm going to wait, and maybe it's not going to happen. And a few weeks later, she called me back. She said, I'm ready. We can do it. And I said, it's great, because I'm in Los Angeles recording some of the things with Hans Zimmer and Moby. Maybe we can. She said, oh, great. I'm actually playing tomorrow in Los Angeles with Kronos Quartet. And after the session, before I go back to New York, I can pass by to the studio and record that. So we had no lyrics, nothing.
Right.
And then I wrote some lyrics during the night. And then I said, actually, we'll have a bass, because she will. And then she went at midnight in the studio, and she sat down and she just transform what I wrote just the night before. Then she went behind the mic, and it was the most extraordinary, magical moment. I mean, she's really, and it was totally unexpected.
Yeah.
The way she did it, she played it, and she has an extraordinary voice, and I have lots of admiration. And probably also the other extraordinary and also unexpected collaboration was with Edward Snowden.
Yeah.
I mean, the fact of collaborating with lots of people are considering as a kind of spy in a sense or something, which is not the case for me. And that was a very, very important collaboration to me. Because, strangely enough, he made me think about my mother. My mother was a great figure in the French Resistance. I've been raised with this idea that when the power in place is really generating ideas or facts, I mean, which may harm our community, some of us have to stand up against that. And it's exactly what Edward did. So we went to Moscow, and then he was very interested in electronic music. And knowing my work and being a real geek, is the real professional geek in this whole project. And then we recorded him in a hotel room in the most unusual and unexpected situation where I didn't know what could happen. It was it was really like a little bit like a spy movie atmosphere. So that was quite an unexpected work and encounter where I didn't know what we could do, what would happen with this.
Okay. So if you could choose somebody who you didn't work with, alive or dead, to sort of collaborate with, who would that be, do you think?
Lots of people that probably will be on the Electronica 3 project. Is the reason why I can't name them.
So you might go back in time for some of them, though.
Yes, exactly. Yes. No.
Well,
no. I mean, somebody I know that is going to be very difficult to work with would be Wendy Carlos.
Yeah.
But I know that she's quite remote from the outside, from the world. So I'm pretty sure that it won't exist. It won't happen.
But that would be fascinating, wouldn't it?
Yeah. And of course also Ennio Morricone. That would be, and actually, I was about to collaborate with him. And what happened, something that I shouldn't even talk about because I met Hans Zimmer before. I was going to go to Rome to meet with Ennio Morricone. And then I met Hans Zimmer. We discussed about the other thing, and suddenly it became clear that we should work together. And then in the same project, having two very big soundtrack composers seemed to me a bit odd. And then I said, okay, I should postpone also because it was difficult to meet with Ennio Morricone. So I hope it may happen in the future.
I mean, that would be amazing, wouldn't it?
But I mean, lots of other people but I'm not going to name them by superstition, because if I mention that to them.
What about people that are dead? People that from the past, you know, who you...
Jimi Hendrix.
Yeah.
And Miles Davis, that would be...
The two?
Yes.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
I mean, these are, for me, that amongst my favorite artists. And also, why I'm talking about them is also artists linked with sounds. What I love so much in both of them is this constant quest for sound.
Yeah.
It's not only the melody, not only sounds, not only jazz, not only... It's just this kind of... obsession with the ultimate sound.
Yeah.
And I really love that.
Yeah, excellent.
Thank you for listening. We'll be back in the studio with Jean-Michel Jarre next week for another episode.